This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 363. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Good to talk to you, man. This might be an interesting podcast. We already started out a little glitchy there, but I'm willing to fight through. Are you? Because there's news to talk about. There's some fake news. There's real news. All the news.
All the news. Yes, we'll try and work through the glitches. You were perfectly crystal clear on the video when we started. Yeah. And then as soon as I threw it to you, you were gone for like 10 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard things that sounded like, you know, we just cut out because there was an EMP or something. So hopefully nothing bad happened.
And the thing is, only we're the ones that are going to hear it. And like once it goes out to the podcast listeners, it'll probably just sound crystal clear and golden as normal.
Oh, for sure. They just need to know how the sausage is made. And look, we're figuring out how the sausage is going to be made this year for the Seahawks, at least on the defensive side of the ball. We've had some news there, and we've also had some news on the offensive side of the ball. So I don't know where you wanted to start.
Well, let's start off with the biggest news and maybe some news that we predicted, or at least maybe not predicted, but we're saying that would be a start considering the season that they had and having to make changes. Well, and you heard from DK Metcalf in his exit interview that he expected changes. So you even knew that some of the players, to them, 7-10 wasn't good enough and that some sort of changes would be made. Now, DK was very vague on the type of changes, you know, oh, well, it could be personnel, it could be scheme, you know, those sorts of things. Turns out it was defensive coordinator Ken Norton Jr., and also defensive passing game coordinator Andre Curtis, who Bob Condotta reported that the Seahawks parted ways with on the defensive side.
Yeah, so you said almost predicted. I'd say catfish! Nailed it, however you want to put it. But let's start all of this out with this caveat, because I think it's important and it's something that isn't said enough. We all wanted changes, and especially on the defensive side of the ball for me, that it was really maddening watching this defense. And so seeing Ken Norton Jr. go is a good thing for the team, but I'm never rooting for a man to lose his job, and him and Andre Curtis, like, that's a sad day. Families are going to be moved, oh, yeah, all that stuff. And that's something to keep in mind. And I just wanted to make sure that we hit on that before we went into the rest of it, because the rest of it is, well, okay, sounds great. Don't let the door hit you. Like, I'm ready for the change, and I'm excited about the possibilities that are out there, because I think there's some high-end stuff that can be done in terms of coaching that can be brought in, and I'm excited about the possibilities.
Well, and you think about it, too, and just the history of Ken Norton Jr. with the Seahawks defense. Now, his stint as defensive coordinator didn't go all that great, but him as a linebackers coach during the Super Bowl years and the Legion of Boom, those are some good years. So we can remember some of the good, along with the idea that maybe we were ready for a change on that side of the ball.
Sure, there was some good, there was some average, there was some bad. But overall, the thing that will define Ken Norton Jr.'s tenure as the defensive coordinator is going to be inconsistency. And especially these last 2 years, with the defense starting out historically bad, rallying to be a respectable squad both years. And that had to be unacceptable when it was all said and done. I mean, we heard that possibly Pete Carroll had let Ken Norton kind of do the cooking for the beginning of the last year and the year before, and then took the reins back when it didn't go well. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's not. Hard telling, not knowing. But
it seems like something that you would say or make sure was leaked out around the time that you were letting somebody go, right?
Right. And I've heard a lot of people also say, too, oh, well, this Ken Norton Jr. firing, another Pete Carroll scapegoat. Like, Pete's like some maniacal backstabber when he's ridiculously loyal to a fault. There's no doubt about that.
Those people with that opinion are the ones that wanted to see Pete Carroll fired this offseason. And, you know, that's a really tough firing to make when he's at the status that he is within the organization. I just don't think, as much as you could want that, the likelihood of it was low.
And the winningest coach in franchise history, not going to be let go after just one losing year in the last decade.
It's not just one losing year. It's, you know, a few seasons now of underwhelming play and not living up to expectations based on Russell Wilson, a quarterback.
Sure. I can see that. My expectations this year were I have no freaking clue. And this team definitely met those expectations. So I think there's some unreasonable expectations from the fan side of things, and rightfully so. We're fanatics. I mean, that's the way it is. The real question is what are Jody Allen's expectations? And clearly they did not meet those expectations this year for her, and she wanted some changes, but she wasn't ready to let Pete and John and Russ and the whole thing just implode on itself. So she's ready to take it for another year. Therefore I am. So here we go. We're going to be looking for a new DC. And I think this is going to be a really important hire for Pete. This is probably the most important one he's had since he got here.
It could be an important hire. My level of optimism that it's going to be something other than someone that Pete has coached with in the past, or maybe they bring up Clint Hurt from the defensive line. Sounds like he was getting some potential looks as defensive coordinator to move to college. Now, if they were to elevate him to the defensive coordinator spot, it would still be within the system. Now, I can understand from Pete Carroll's perspective, he wants to know that he has a guy, especially on defense, that he can trust. It was one thing on the offensive side when he's not quite the offensive guy. So, and maybe that was part of the talks with Russ, that they get somebody who is a little bit separate from Pete, outside of, you know, the traditional system that he's kind of worked with him before. But it seems like he's been willing to, because I don't think he had any past history necessarily with Schottenheimer. So on the offensive side, there doesn't seem to be that kind of history. Whereas on the defensive side, it seems much more likely to get somebody that he knows that he can work with. And by extension, that's going to leave fans to think that, you know, it's just Pete trying to work his defense. Obviously, he's a defensive coach. But for him to have quite a bit more say on the defensive side.
Have Pete have quite a bit more say on the defensive side?
Hiring a coach that allows him to continue to have more say on the defensive side.
Oh, sure. He's been doing that forever, but that's not working. So if I'm Jody Allen, one of the things that comes out of that meeting is, all right, there's got to be some changes. And clearly you can't fire Waldron after 1 year. It's not like he totally stank. And it's not like Russell Wilson wasn't hurt for a good part of the season. So it's not going to be Waldron. So that leaves Ken Norton Jr. And you could have, you know, picked either side of the ball to make changes to, honestly, after this last year. So he chose defense. And then if I'm Jody Allen, I say, look, I understand that you like having your guys. I know you like being in charge of the defense. And I know you brought us a historically good defense at the beginning of your tenure. Those times have changed. Offenses have adjusted. It's time to bring in some new blood. And on top of that, you are not all cozy on your seat here. We need to turn up the heat. So you're going to bring in a guy that is going to challenge you, that you have to give over the reins to on that side of the ball. It'll allow you to concentrate on some of the more overarching things like discipline, which was a problem with this team throughout the year in terms of timely penalties and things of that nature. And I want you to bring in somebody that is going to make you squirm a little bit. That would be my mandate if I were Jody Allen.
Yeah, I like this fictional conversation that you're having with Pete Carroll. I'm not quite sure that that's the way that it necessarily would have gone with him last week when these two met. Now, okay, so if you're Pete Carroll, though, and that is the mandate, and you're charged with essentially, it almost sounds like the way that you're saying that is that I'm being charged with going out and finding someone who could eventually be my successor. And I don't know if I'm into that.
You're under contract, pal. Sorry. I don't care if you're into it or not. What you're doing right now isn't working. And so we have to do something different. I really feel like that would need to be the conversation. Whether that was a conversation that was had or not, I don't know. Now, if you're Pete Carroll and you're self-scouting thyself, as Chris Sims likes to say, right. Don't you have to look in the mirror and be like, all the guys that I know really well and basically are yes men for me haven't been working. I need to find somebody that challenges me. I need to find somebody who maybe shares a lot of my defensive mentality, but also is going to be like, dude, we're changing these five things, and that's how it's going to be. And that's why for me, I think you need to go out and make a big dog hire. None of this like assistant of a guy who has been an assistant forever, like the Clint Hurts of the world, not interested. I'm sorry. Maybe he's a fine coach. I don't know, but I don't want that promotion from within. somebody who's been around this same losing situation. On top of that, with Clint Hurt, has the defensive line been stellar since they lost Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett and all those guys during the LOB era? No, not even with an influx of talent at different points, whether that was Clowney or Reed or whoever it is you want to talk about.
Yeah, and you could say that really, I think with the talent that they had on the defensive line, that you can't quite put all of that on Hurt. So yeah, without knowing what kind of dude he is, it seems like the players like him. So he could end up being a fine coach. And it sounds like he's going to get an interview. The other guy who is looking like will get an interview because they requested it from the Broncos is their defensive coordinator, Ed Donatell. Now, just last week, you were telling me Fangio was your top guy. Now, This is the guy right under Fangio. And again, Going back to what we just talked about, this is a guy that Pete Carroll has familiarity with. He was Pete's defensive coordinator when he was with the Jets. They go all the way back to when Pete was defensive coordinator at the University of the Pacific, and he was the defensive backs coach there with Pete. So there is definitely some history here. This seems like exactly the type of hire that Pete is going to end up making.
Ed Donatell, that's who you're talking about, right?
Yeah, Ed Donatell.
Well, here's the thing. I don't understand. Look, if they make that hire, I'm going to be very disappointed. I'm going to be about as disappointed as I was when they hired Shoddy, because I don't understand why you would bring in a guy who is the subordinate to the commander when the commander is potentially available. And I know a lot of folks are going to say, oh, well, geez Louise, Fangio or Flores, they won't possibly be available to, they're going to be up for head coaching positions. Sure. Tell me which head coaching position short of the Vikings is an attractive one right now.
There's not many. The Vikings would make sense. Now, I just don't know. Would the Vikings go with another defensive guy, though, after getting rid of Zimmer? Would that usually when an organization moves on from a defensive guy, they switch over to an offensive guy. I could see them making that change. That's not necessarily going to be that way. But look, none of these jobs are all that great because they're with franchises that are consistently losing organizations
and ownership groups that are a mess right now. And look, I understand that in Jacksonville, you have Trevor Lawrence. That's great. I like Trevor Lawrence. I still think he can be a fine quarterback in this league. Great prospect.
I don't see them going with a defensive coach either. If you have the number one overall draft pick as your quarterback and you're not going offensive coordinator, well, that does seem like a decision that a really bad organization might make.
Yeah, they're an organization that likes to go after names, and you've heard Harbaugh linked a little bit to
I feel like I've heard him leaked to every single team.
Sure.
I think I've even heard him leaked as a name for the Cardinals if they were to fire Cliff Kingsbury.
That would be interesting. But that might be far-fetched. But there's no way that if I'm one of those two guys, why, especially if I'm Flores, like, why would I want to take another long shot type situation like I did with the Dolphins, actually turn it around to a large degree and then still get canned? Why would I take another long shot situation where now I'm a two-time failed head coach? Like, that's just not how you do it. That's not what you'd be looking for. And generally, when you're fired as a head coach, you end up taking a step back to your offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator duties that made you a hot candidate to begin with.
Like Dan Quinn did with leaving the Falcons, going to Dallas, and now he's a head coach candidate once again, and we'll see how that goes. But yeah, generally the way things go with the defensive coaches or even the offensive coaches.
If you're looking to shake things up big, you make a big push for Fangio or Flores, and you go out there and you hand them a big wad of cash. You say, come here, cut your teeth for like 2 years. So let's see how it goes. Somebody that can challenge him. And I understand Flores is probably the longer shot because his defensive style is definitely a more gambling, blitzing style than Pete likes to run. There was a game, I think it was against the Ravens, where they brought 10 dudes on like 80% of the plays and just housed them. And I don't think Pete would fly with that necessarily, but that would be the type of fresh hire that I'd be really excited about. Donatell, a guy that was a failed defensive coordinator in Green Bay, a failed defensive coordinator in Atlanta. worked with Jim Mora of all people. Like, I don't want that stink around the organization again. I don't understand the rationale there. I think that's a lateral move and just another yes man for Pete to push around. And I think it would be a failure of a hire. I just don't think that that's the way this organization should go.
Well, it is interesting that you bring up the, you know, the idea of being more aggressive, because we heard from Adam Jude, who's a Seattle Times reporter. He and Bob Condotta have kind of been covering most of this transition. And one of the things he tweeted out on Tuesday was a tweet saying, "The coaching changes do represent for Pete Carroll at least a small pivot in his defensive philosophy, per sources. Carroll preferred cover two this season because his priority was to limit explosive plays, which it did. But he does plan to be more attack-minded going forward."
Well, that'd be cool. And if that's the case, there's another name that nobody's talking about, and I think would be another excellent hire as a defensive coordinator. I don't think it's going to happen, because I'm imagining this guy's going to take a year off and spend it with his hot girlfriend. Zimmer. I would try to bring in Zimmer.
Yeah.
Like, get him away from the offense. Let Pete and Waldron, like, make those sort of decisions about the offense and risk management and all that, and put Zimmer where he is a wizard, just in charge of the defense. I think that's a guy who could challenge Pete. That's a guy who could get along with Pete and has a similar mindset of how they want to play ball.
Sure.
I think that'd be a great fit.
That would be a good fit with their two personalities. I would agree. I don't think it does anything necessarily to advance the concerns that some fans have that, you know, Pete has this old school mentality and was going out to get another old school minded coach.
I don't care.
Oh, I know. I know. It's just, I'm just saying that will fuel that even more. And, you know, the people would have to accept that. That's fine. But I can envision that.
Mm-hmm. Everybody that hates the old school mentality, the idea that running the football is a good thing, I would like you to go back and watch the first round of the playoffs. Here, just this last week, the Bills demolished the Patriots because they ran the hell out of the ball.
Yeah.
The Niners choked out the Cowboys because they ran the hell out of the ball. The Rams destroyed the Cardinals and have found their surge late in the season because they are running the ball. So I'm sorry, everybody that doesn't like running the football and loves, you know, throwing the ball on every down, but that's not winning football. It never has been, and it never will be until they change the rules even more, I suppose. But you got to actually do that. And you need coaches that are on board with you. And you need somebody, if you're Pete, to challenge it and also to share a similar mindset in the way football looks. Zimmer, Fangio, I think even Flores is in that genre. And we're not talking enough about Gus Bradley either. Because Who knows what happens to him in Las Vegas?
Really, with all of those names, the idea of bringing in someone with that head coaching background and experience, I think it would be good for Pete to have somebody there to challenge him a little bit. I think at this point that would be good for him, because I do think it has gotten a little bit too comfy for Pete. And so if, like you said, if I'm Jody Allen, that's the direction that I'm trying to push. I do wonder if maybe even she would have some final say on who the decisions are throughout the interview process. I'd be curious about that.
I doubt it, but possibly. I mean, we just need more accountability for Pete within the room than Tater and his son.
Right.
Like that's not enough. It's just not.
Speaking of sons too, it was Tom Donatell. And see, this is what's leading me down the Donatell road, is that Ed's son, Tom, was a quality control defensive assistant for the Seahawks for 3 or 4 years. Now he's with the Chargers as like an assistant defensive backs coach or something. And so there's this tie. And I do think that tie between those two is what ultimately makes that decision happen. I think that's the direction it's going.
I'd be wholly disappointed. I mean, it's just more of the same at that point, and it's just not what we need. I don't know how Donatell feels about linebackers playing soft zone on every single play. That'd be probably my first question. Yeah. But I just don't want to see a retread in terms of, well, this is the way I'd put it.
I don't necessarily know how you can call Donatell a retread when he has been working with Fangio. And I suppose you don't know how much Fangio is on the defensive side. But, you know, because how much credit do you give to the Broncos' success on defense last year to the head coach Fangio versus the defensive coordinator? I have to think there's at least some crossover to where I'm curious why you're so into Fangio, but not in on the idea of the defensive coordinator that coordinated the defense.
Great. You led me right to my point, and I'm really grateful for that. So basically, so you're a hotshot defensive coordinator. Let's say you're Brian Flores, right? And you get your chance to be a head coach. You go and you be a head coach and it doesn't work out. Then you go back to being a defensive coordinator and you're probably going to have a good amount of success, right?
Right.
So you made a step up from the coordinator position to head coaching. Wade Phillips is a great example of this. Wade Phillips multiple times ended up being a head coach, a little over his skis, wasn't quite great as a head coach, but
catfish!
Damn, he was a hell of a defensive coordinator. And so I want a guy who reaches the highest level and then comes back to where he's really good, rather than somebody like this Ed guy who was a defensive coordinator twice in Atlanta and Green Bay, gets run out of town. So his ceiling was where he peaked out, where things didn't work, where he wasn't at his best, was that defensive coordinator. And then he's always been busted back down to a position coach. That's why I don't want that guy.
Right.
Because the coordinator position is too big for his skis. And if you're at, you say, well, he succeeded in Denver. Did he? Did he?
Well, you were the guy just last week crowing about how good the Broncos defense was this year. And so
Fangio.
I understand that. I was curious why you were opposed to that, considering that it's the guy who was with Fangio. But you gave your answer. I will accept it. And I do think that that's it is an important distinction. So maybe they bring him in and he ends up being the guy who takes over for Andre Curtis as the passing game coordinator, if that's how things work. If maybe Denver's,
there we go.
Because Denver had to give him permission, which is interesting because they fired the head coach, but I guess the assistants are still on the roster until you hire the new coach and then they decide to clean house. So I suppose that's how that works.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to find out with Gus Bradley, right? Do they stick with the interim head coach there? The guy that Bill Simmons said looks like a pit boss in Vegas. and if they do, I imagine he would definitely want Gus Bradley back.
Yeah. Not, and I guess I would expect Gus Bradley to be available now that Mike Mayock has been fired. The new GM comes in.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Mayock fired on Tuesday. So that I think that the GM will make a different head coaching decision because there's not going to be that tie to the interim coach, but who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, who else is on your radar other than Donatel?
You know, when you brought up Wade Phillips, I was thinking, you know, he's been out of the league a couple of years. I wonder if he'd be interested in coming back.
I don't know. I'd be open to it.
I like Wade Phillips a lot. Like, his Twitter personality is fun. I think he's a guy who, and would have kind of a similar kind of old school mentality like Pete does. And gosh, when we saw him in LA, I think you saw a little bit of a step back. I
mean, he's been an excellent defensive coordinator wherever he's gone. There's just no doubt about it. So it's going to be interesting to see this hire. I genuinely hope it's something that does, you know, really test Pete and make him think outside the box a little bit more on defense. And as somebody who's a good developmental coach, because there's a lot of young talent on this team that could be brought along even further. I mean, whether that's Daryl Taylor or any of the young defensive linemen, just right there.
Well, that's, again, what makes me think, too. You know, if Donatel's doing the defensive back stuff and he could be a mentor to a young guy like Deshaun Shedd, who, you know, could be a guy who rises up through the coaching ranks if things are going well with him. Obviously, not bad news for him, just the other two defensive coaches. Why don't we flip over to the offensive coach, though, that ended up getting hired away? The Seahawks going to be looking for a new quarterbacks coach now that Austin Davis hired away.
Yeah. Austin Davis hired away as quarterbacks coach. I could take the position of Russell Wilson quarterback coach and then get promoted to somewhere else. Basically, I would just be a different Adam riding the coattails of a star quarterback. Instead of Adam Gaze, I'd be Adam Emmert. Like, I can do that. I'm sure Austin Davis did just about the same thing. No, I'm not saying he's a terrible coach like Gaze is, but I don't know how much credit you give him in that situation.
I guess you brought up Carl Tater Smith still on the roster. So that was the guy who was the quarterback coach before. He's still with the team. So I don't know where they go there.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe Waldron has a guy.
Hey, hard telling not knowing again, but yeah, there's obviously not going to be a ton of change on the offensive side of the ball. That's something that we've learned here in this week or so since the end of the season. And I know it's not as much change as most people wanted, but it's the change we're going to get. So let's hope that at least on the defensive side of the ball, we can take a team that just gave up time of possession game in, game out, and get the ball back to Russ on a more regular schedule than they did this season. Because that was the biggest bugaboo for Ken Norton over the last couple of years, is just time of possession. You just couldn't get people off the field in between the 20s, and it ended up being a disaster.
Yeah, that's got to be the thing that gets cleaned up. And if anything, it does sound like, at least through the tweets and the sources, that Pete wants to be more aggressive. And I think that would be helpful for this defense moving forward. So another thing that would be helpful for us and fans this offseason is not having the same level of offseason drama that we had last offseason.
Good luck with that, because I don't know if you knew this, Brandon, but Russell Wilson is exploring his options that he doesn't have.
Hey, he has lots of options. Why does everybody think when Russell Wilson is reported as wanting to explore options this offseason that it automatically means football? There's all kinds of options that, even with football, I mean, you can train a certain way. You can decide whether or not you want to go down the TB12 route or kind of your own route. Mm-hmm. Gosh, he has options of whether or not he might want to join the Yankees again for spring training. I mean, he has all kinds of offseason options.
Shoot, maybe he wants to become a backup singer for Ciara. Like, maybe that's one of his options.
That's an option.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. But you know what the media
all... We all have options, and they're all worth exploring.
Well, did you read the Rappaport? I'm going to call him Rap Poop, because when I made a comment in the Ring of Honor about this, typing in Rappaport, it auto-corrected to Rap Poop. And I think that's pretty apropos, really, because it was a poop article. So basically, he starts out, he's just like, oh, yeah, sources say Russ wants to explore his options this offseason. And then buried at the bottom of the article is he is under contract for two more years. And the Seahawks have said they don't want to trade him. And he said he didn't want to go anywhere. So,
right. Except for those things, he really wants to explore other destinations and whether or not those teams would put him in position to win another championship, as the article puts it.
Yeah, he has no options on this. He is under catfishing contract. This isn't free agency. Like, that's what these guys don't seem to get. And then the more annoying part to me, you talk about the drama of the offseason, is how many articles did you see with that as the headline that are just re-reporting the garbage headline that they picked up? Right. Oh, let's write an article about Ian Rappaport's article that he got from a source that doesn't make any sense.
Well, and that's why I don't know if this necessarily helps it, but Pete Carroll went on Q13 with Aaron Levine and was asked directly if we're going to be able to minimize the level of offseason drama this year.
You've been with Russell Wilson for a full decade now. At the end of the day, we all know the number one philosophy both of you share is to win games. Last offseason, I'll be honest, was really tough on fans out there, even the media as well. You think we can get through an offseason without the rumors and speculation? Are we all on the same page here?
I don't know that. I wouldn't try to, I don't want to give you false hopes, because there's just so much stuff that can happen, in the offseason. There's unpredictable stuff, but we'll do everything we can to keep it in order and all that. But, let me say this, Aaron, that we're going to compete at every turn. That's all we know how to do. That's all John and I've been doing since we got here. And we're not backing off that. We're going to, whatever is there, we got to exhaust the opportunities for our club. And right from the owner, Jody wants us to take a look at every single opportunity to better the franchise and to help us. So that's what we do. And we'll we'll try to take you along with this. I'll try to be as straight as I can with you so you know what's going on as a fanship and all that, because we love you and we want you to be part of what's happening. But it's going to take us, it's going to take us some time to put it all together. It's just, as it always is, there's a lot of really difficult decisions that have to be made this time of year. And they start, you know, with the free agents and well before the draft and all that. And so I love this locker room. I love this team and what they bring, leadership, and how much they love to practice and play and work together and play for one another. We've got the nucleus of a championship right here. And so we're going to try to keep that together, and we'll take you with us as we go through it.
Do you want me to parse that out for everyone?
Oh my gosh. There's a lot to parse out, I think, in that one.
Oh no, that's pretty simple.
Oh, with regard to Russ. Okay. Yes. Let's see if your parsing is the same way I hear this.
We have a nucleus of a championship team that includes an all-star quarterback. Lots of unexpected things can happen in the offseason. Like, I don't know, somebody could offer us some godfather trade of like five firsts or something like that, which we consider. And that's why we're not squashing all this right now. We're just waiting to see if anybody calls with that, even though Russ has its lowest trade value and maybe his entire career at this point. But we're going to keep the door open. Russ wants to be back. I want him back. If somebody gives us a catfish ton, then sure, maybe we'll take it. But other than that, it's probably going to be fine.
See, when I heard him say, I'm not going to guarantee any, well, and I can't even remember exactly what he said now, but he essentially was giving no guarantees. And the way I heard that was, I don't know if Russ is going to go back on television and start running his mouth and give the media more to run on this offseason like he did last offseason when his Walter Payton Man of the Year interviews. Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen again this year. It's a good sign, though, that when Russell Wilson went on the Manning Cast on Monday night for the Rams-Cardinals game, this, according to Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, that Wilson had an agreement in place to avoid discussing Seahawks drama during the broadcast.
Yeah, doing his part, or at least trying to. I guess Peyton asked him about it at the end.
If he did, it was a non-answer because it went unreported, essentially. So whatever he did, it worked, because out of the Manning Cast interview, I saw very little to no drama coming out of that.
I did see one article talk about it. And again, I haven't watched it yet, so I don't know exactly what was said, but apparently, according to this article, Peyton asked him about it towards the end and Russ stammered around, got really red, and then was like, go Hawks, and then left.
Right.
Which I'm not even sure if that's true. I have to go watch it myself. But
he did say go Hawks, though. I know I saw that part of it. And I think that that's a good sign, because I don't think he was go Hawksing all that much last offseason.
No, the go Hawksing was mothballed there for a couple months, and everybody was hanging on the end of every cliche laden interview to see if their go Hawks would pop out. So I think that's good. Look, they've all said it. We all know where this is going to go in terms of Russ. It, like I said, unless there's some godfather trade, then boy, give the media some credit for trying to cook up some doozies. I saw one the other day. I think it was from ESPN that. It went something like, we traded Russ to New Orleans, got a crap ton of stuff, then traded the crap ton of stuff for Derek Carr.
And, oh my gosh.
And everybody moved on. I was like, what? Like, what are you talking about? That's not happening. They didn't even make it like a three-team trade. They were just like, oh yeah, no, they'll just trade Russ and then go out and get somebody else. I mean, whoever wrote that article, they sound like a Giants fan. Well, just go out and get Russ.
Just go out and do it. Or a Bears fan. That's what they were doing last year. Oh, just trade picks away for Russ.
Yeah, even though he's not available.
It's that easy.
Yeah, it's that easy. Yeah,
everybody knows that he wants out.
Oh, yeah, everybody knows. It's been reported. Reported, in quotes. It's so sickening. And look, I'm already pissed off about it. And
I know, you're starting to piss me off now, too.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, like, we've got months and months and months of this crap until the start of the league new year, where it makes it almost impossible to trade him. So we're just going to be stuck until then. What is that, March?
You know, I just have to say, you've said this enough times now that I have to call you out on it.
Yeah.
The way that you say league new year, it's very interesting where you're putting the emphasis. Like, I would say new league year or league new year, but you go league new year, which... I don't know. It grates on me a little.
You don't like the league new year?
The league new year? No, nothing about that sounds right to me.
Should I change it up? Should I just be like League New Year?
League New Year. Yeah. Like Happy New Year. League New Year.
Yeah, okay. I didn't realize that this was a problem. My emphasis on either. The word
it
new. Did.
I thought I was just going to, I just let it go last show because, you know, it was going along. I didn't want to put the show to a grinding halt, but we have time this week. It's now the off season.
I thought that Captain Optimism over here would love the idea that I focused on the word new, like new beginning.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe. You should get on board with this. How are you not on board with this?
I guess I'll get on board with it. Let's get to the second half of the show. We got to watch a lot of NFC West playoff teams in the playoffs.
All right. I'm going to take offense to the way that you just said we got to watch a lot.
We did our best not to gouge our eyes out as we watched only one NFC West team lose over the wild card weekend.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say the Niners won. I would put it more like the Cowboys decided they didn't want to win. That was a dreadful game to watch. I mean, good Lord. I mean, we can all be frustrated with the way that the game ended with Dak taking the draw there, which apparently was called. I don't know. It's hard to say. But
yeah, I guess McCarthy called it. He made it sound like, because this is another one of my favorite coach things. Oh, yeah, I'd do it again, too. Okay, you watched how it went the first time, and you do the same thing again. You call the same thing. That's not smart.
But well, yes, maybe call the same thing again, but just tell Dak to get down maybe like 4 seconds earlier.
The ball to the official rather than his center. Yeah,
that
would help make that go a little bit better.
Yeah, but that wasn't the problem with that game. The problem with that game was all the penalties. I mean, what an undisciplined team. Like that's a mark of a Mike McCarthy run franchise right there. Just penalty after boneheaded penalty that let the Niners really just close that out. I will give the Niners a little bit of credit though. They actually figured out that their best, quote, wide receiver is a running back. And they figured that out.
Yeah. They just put Debo in the backfield right next to Jimmy G.
There you go. And look, he's a running back. Who knew? It's almost as if other people have been trying to tell him that for a long time.
It's kind of like you have been saying that for a while. Yes.
Yeah.
there were a couple interesting moments in that game. Now, one moment that I didn't quite understand was the fake punt where, and come on, 49ers, you know who their special teams coordinator is because you played against him with the Rams. And in that situation, you couldn't figure out that they were going to run a fake punt right there at a point where they were down multiple touchdowns and they just were at midfield and they only needed 4 yards. Gosh, that special teams unit is terrible. That's the one that we scored on the fake punt with. And they couldn't manage to get that. But then the weird thing was, is that they leave the punt team on the field. And I guess I could understand it from the perspective of you're trying to catch the 49ers special teams unit in a substitution. But the official stood over the ball and allowed the substitution to happen, even though the special teams unit stayed on the field for the Cowboys. And I don't know. I thought that you weren't allowed to, and maybe after a fourth down, you're allowed to substitute or something, but I just thought you weren't allowed to substitute if one team decided to keep their dudes on the field.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Well, you can still substitute if there's time. Like you can get back and forth, but the ref shouldn't hold the game up. Like,
yeah,
They should only hold the game up if the offense substitutes, then on defense, you're allowed to make a substitution.
Right.
That whole sequence was odd. Like in that moment, you're like, you're really not going for this. Like really? And then they trot the punt team out there and I was still flabbergasted for about half a sec. And then I thought about it for two ticks. And like, to your point, I was like, oh, well, this is a fake.
Yeah,
of course this is a fake. I knew it was a fake before they ran the play. Like, and I'm a dumbass. Like out in the, you know, in the middle of Montana. How did the Dallas coaching staff not see this
guy? Yeah, the special teams coordinator.
Yeah. I mean, how's the Niners special teams coordinator not like, oh, geez, maybe we ought to be aware of a fake here.
Yeah, I could understand a little bit of frustration. And then, you know, the official stands over the ball and allows the 49ers to substitute. And maybe, I don't know, maybe a dude came on the field from the sideline from Dallas that they didn't see. But
maybe.
Yeah, and then they end up having to call their own timeout, which is what I think they were trying to get the Niners to do. But
yeah, apparently, which I was like, okay. I mean, you're gambling with this critical fourth down to try to get Shanahan to burn an extra timeout.
No, it wasn't. Like, it was a first down at that point because they had just made the fake. Oh, right. and they kept the punt unit on the field as a way
That's right.
You got the first down, bring your offense up back on the field and run some plays and stop trying to be cute.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now's not the time. You're in the middle of a playoff game fighting for your playoff lives when, you know, you've been waxed the first half of the game and you're finally making a game of it. And Jimmy G wrapped up his, you know, game in, game out gift and threw up a pick late in the game. That was atrocious. My question to you, how many picks does Jimmy G throw in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field this next week? What's the over under 73? Like, or do they not let him throw that much?
I think that if Shanahan's smart, they probably pass the ball less than 10 times. And so probably. You minimize your opportunity for Jimmy G to throw picks in Lambeau.
So you just Mac Jones him? You just right? You take the ball out of his hands?
I think so.
Yeah, it seems to be the thing to do with Jimmy. The good news about the Niners winning is that they're definitely going to lose next weekend. And that keeps Kyle as the head coach. So that's good for our deal. Then we can continue to own him.
Yeah, I'm worried about Cliff being able to stay in the division after their monumental collapse and embarrassing defeat to the Rams. That was awful. And you talk about Jimmy G and his interception throwing. How about Kyler shortest pick six in history, Murray?
That was ugly, man. Kyler had a rough
so
game.
Bad. That was unbelievably bad to not even throw it in the dirt, but to essentially alley-oop it to the Rams defense. That was a strange choice there.
I think he'll learn after that play, or I would think he would learn that giving up 2 points is better than giving up seven in those situations.
Yeah, because the way he threw it up, that there was no chance that a Rams player wasn't coming down with that.
But I mean, as much as it sucks to see the Rams win, in as frustrating as that was, how satisfying was it to see the Cardinals collapse down the stretch of this season and then blow it in the playoffs in just a disastrous way? Just like we both of us were like, yep, this is coming, guys. Just wait. This are the Cardinals real talk? Like, I remember that. What was that, like 6 weeks ago? Oh, how come nobody's talking about the Cardinals? The Cardinals are real.
They're 10-2. They're on their way to a Super Bowl. Kyler Murray is going to be the MVP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They just, I'll give Cliff some credit. I mean, he pushed off the terrible collapse. I don't know what, 5 weeks further than they normally do. Usually they'll get out to like a 3-0 start or 4-1 and then, you know, just totally tank. I mean, they got all the way to 10-2 before they decided to become terrible again.
Yeah, pretty impressive. And it just happened to coincide with DeAndre Hopkins going down. I thought maybe he could make it back for this game against the Rams and actually give him a chance, but no.
And then we had to watch the stupid Rams have a good game. And look, the Rams, after their massive struggles in the I don't know what was it. It wasn't exactly the end of the season. It was in between midseason and the end of the season. There's about 3-4 weeks there that everybody finally figured out, oh, they can't run the ball. And then they figured out how to run the ball.
Well, they got Sony Michel. Now they got Cam Akers back. So it could make it tough, but now they're going to be going up against Tampa Bay and man,
loss.
You try and run on Tampa. Mm-hmm. Now, it was a little bit different with Philly because they were all about the run.
Yeah.
And you saw Tampa's defense. Oh, we'll just put 11 dudes in the box and just dare you to throw it. Yeah. Just go ahead. Try and throw.
Yeah. I'd be close to the game plan I would employ if I were Tampa in this game. I mean, if you shut down the Rams run game and then just wait for Stafford to have to throw it 35 times, you're going to get two gifts and you're going to win the game. Tom Brady's going to do what Tom Brady does. Just check it down, be patient, win it at the end. Like, this is a terrible matchup for the Rams. They're going to get smoked, and we're going to see Tom moving on again in the playoffs.
Yeah,
like, that's happening. Book it.
I don't know if the Rams get smoked, but I would put the line at the Bucks winning at probably 8 points.
Okay, 8 points. I was thinking probably like 10, but the one thing that the Rams do have going for them in this game is that they do have the defensive linemen to rush for and get pressure possibly on Tom.
Right.
And that's been his Achilles heel. That's the only way that you can beat Tom Brady. So there is a chance, but if you end up in a game where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers take away the run and put it in Stafford's hands and make him try to win it, like basically exploit their Achilles heel, and then you have Tom on the other side of the ball and you try to exploit his Achilles heel, when both those quarterbacks are under pressure in the vise like that, which one of them is coming through?
Yeah.
One playoff win, Stafford.
And didn't really have to throw a whole lot to try. I know everybody was going, oh, he had the best quarterback rating of any quarterback in Rams history in the playoffs this last week. Yeah, what did he have to do? He checked it down all day and had a great run game in front of him. Like, of course he had a great game. Like, he didn't have to do anything.
Yeah, a couple nice scrambles. It's laughable. Enjoy the so-called win there, LA fans, for a week, and I hope you don't cry yourself to sleep next week.
Now, one thing we do have to worry about, though, is the NFL putting their thumb down on this.
Yeah, I don't know that they're putting their thumb down on Tom Brady.
I mean, has Tom Brady tested positive for COVID yet this season?
Did anybody test positive for COVID this last week when it was playoff time?
I know. That's why I'm thinking like this is the perfect time for the Tom Brady test to come back as a positive.
There's going to be zero COVID positives this week as well. And zero the next. Like, yeah.
Yeah. You can't have a positive test if you don't test.
Yeah, I think we had a president that had that sort of philosophy at one point.
There, that may have been said at one point, yes.
But to wrap all that up, the playoffs thus far and the NFC West teams in the playoffs, catfish them all still.
That is a great place to end it. Time now to welcome and thank some of our members of the flock.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
You can become a member of the flock by going to getintheflock.com. And those of you who were in our Facebook Ring of Honor group, you got to see our live video go out. Well, and those of you who are subscribed on YouTube, too, as we went live Tuesday evening, you, me, Clinton, we talked a little defensive coordinator talk, and we obviously brought some of that same talk to this show, too. But a little bit of a bonus and something I think we're going to try and do more of this offseason.
Yeah, we chatted with Clinton a bit, and I think we're all excited about the opportunity. So if you are subscribed to this podcast and you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, up until this point, there was no point to do it because it was the same exact stuff on YouTube as this show.
Right.
But going forward, there's going to be all sorts of these little ditties that we're going to do. And you actually get to see our smiling faces as we do it as well, which I think is a bonus. I don't know.
Something.
But some people seem to think so. So go to YouTube, find us there, and subscribe.
Find us there. And if you want to get in the flock like these folks did, you can become a member of the flock like our executive producers, who we want to thank first, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, and our EPs for this month, Floctimus Prime, Bridget Pernovost, and Chad Johnson. And our newest member of the flock, Brent Taylor, the editor of Roll Bama Roll on SB Nation, in at $3 a month.
Hey, well, welcome, buddy. Maybe he can be the one to explain to me the way that Alabama's name, mascot, and everything about that team works, because it makes no sense to me. So they're the Crimson Tide, and then their mascot's an elephant? And I've never seen a tide that's crimson. And if you do, it seems like a bad sign. They barely have any ocean. They don't have any ocean frontage. I mean, it's the Gulf. It's not an ocean.
It's a body of water.
It's a body of water. Nobody really thinks of Alabama as a coastal state in a lot of ways.
Brent writes in and says, hey, guys, I'm joining in after freeloading this last season. I found the podcast through Field Goals a while back when Mookie had me join Brandon for a pre-draft podcast. Your extra long pods have helped me pass the time with all the driving I do for work. Keep up the great work. Just lay off the Sean Alexander hate. He's what brought me to the Seahawks. Go Hawks, from Brent. And Brent, I wouldn't hold my breath on Adam laying off the Sean Alexander hate. It has been here from day one. So that is unfortunate. We may have to live with it.
So I tried to get some Alabama fans last time I was down there to explain to me how their the Crimson Tide and their mascot is an elephant. Crickets.
No explanation.
No explanation, because it makes zero sense.
Oh, well, I maybe we'll get some insight from Brent. I know that every offseason on Field Goals, I'll have Brent on and we'll usually talk prospects. So I'll look forward to doing that here again this season, too. So welcome to the flock to Brent. And a thank you going out to Santiago Lopez, who upped his pledge from $3 a month to $5.
Heck yeah.
Santiago writes in, after all the talk of freeloading and dirty wheel grinding, I decided to go back and check how much I was contributing to the show. To my surprise, I was faced with a message in glowing red text that said payment failed. Apologies for being an accidental freeloader. I look forward to listening to both of you during the long off season, and go Hawks. Yes, you know what? Santiago brings up a good point. You would be surprised that just how easy it is to fall into accidental freeloader status, because sometimes payments fall through. Now, if you're at 12 and above, then you can just listen to the end of the thank you show. And if you hear your name, you know you're good. If you don't hear your name, then, hey, maybe you want to check. So thanks to Santiago for checking that out and getting back into the green.
Dude, I didn't know what we did to garner the raise, but appreciate it, buddy. Thank you, Santiago.
I think that the promise of more off-season content, plus letting people know that you're trying to get out of the wheel grinding business, that you... and that this can help move you from dirty wheel grinder to whatever term you want to use for awesome podcaster, I guess.
Yeah. Broadcaster extraordinaire. I'd take that.
Okay.
Look,
that seemed a little bit higher than I was willing to go, but yeah. Okay.
That's fine. I said what 2 years ago that if you weren't the MVP of podcasting for that year, that I was going to throw a riot. Like, so if you don't want to give me that kind of credit, that's fine. But yes, you also said dirty wheel grinder instead of just dirty grinder. It makes it less funny, so do better. But yeah, I'd like to get out of the mill, man. Like, it sucks. And here's the thing. Like, me and Clinton and Brandon, we just sat down and we talked about it, and we're formulating a game plan. And I think it's going to be exciting. So we'll see how it goes. If you guys can, you know, get on board and help us out a little bit more with that, this could be a success. And we could have a lot more of me and Brandon in your life. And, you know, that's definitely good with Brandon. But for me, I mean, it is what it is.
Yes. Going into our 10th season covering the Seahawks, this is the time that we decided that we're going to start a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Much like the Seahawks, especially myself, we need to get more consistent about this. And so, yeah, I think that's what the plan is. And there's going to be a lot more content coming your way, hopefully. And it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. And with your guys' support, I think it's going to go gangbusters. So appreciate you all, and appreciate all of you that are thinking about coming on board, becoming a little flocker, because it's a good time.
And we did get one more raise, too, from Al down in Australia, upping his pledge from $6 to $8.50 Australian dollars. So thanks to Al.
Yeah, appreciate that, man. I wonder, is the Aussie dollar like equal exchange with
you know, US I think dollar? You ask this every single time, and
I do, but here's the thing, like $8.50 is just it's an odd amount, right? Like, just because it's not a whole dollar.
That's the amount of value that Al finds in the show. Just let it go. And that's, you know, the thing is, Al's been with the show for so long that he probably joined when there was some level that was an equivalent to whatever six Australian dollars is. And now he's upping his game. So we appreciate that.
Better for our deal, better for his. It's going to work out great.
Well, the fact that we read a negative review last week worked out great for us, because Chadillac 74 is in with a 5-star review, says, go Hawks, just go Hawks. How have I forgotten to leave a review for the show? After hearing about people leaving 1-star reviews, I found the strong need to share my valuable opinion. If you want a podcast hosted by real people, as opposed to employed media staffers, this is the podcast for you. From analysis to humor, and some important Seahawks therapy when needed.
Heck yeah, man. See, he thinks I'm a broadcaster extraordinaire. 5-star one.
It was not in the actual text, but it was in the subtext. I'll give you that.
Yeah, it was implied.
Yeah.
It was implied. You're a broadcaster extraordinaire too, Brandon. Yeah, I just want to make sure you get the proper credit here. You know?
I feel that you putting yourself on the same level with me is bold, but I'll allow it.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It's nice to be here. It's nice to be in this this club.
Jerv writes in, Bengals-Packers for best Super Bowl with the Bengals winning. Ooh, that's still on the table. Dallas yeah. Chiefs would be the worst because defense would be optional.
Yeah, true fact. It'd make my dad happy, though. He's a Chiefs fan. So, you know, it's not a huge loss.
Another Chiefs championship for them.
Yeah, I almost wanted to make the Chiefs my better at life this week for removing Big Ben from my football life forever.
He's done.
He's done. Okay, bye.
Thank goodness.
See you later. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that would have been worth, though, a Raiders-Chargers kneel down just as a big one last
catfish
you to Ben.
That
I think that's
great.
Why we were rooting for it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. That's why I was rooting for it.
Ivan writes in, says, wouldn't it be ironic if Penny goes back to sucking? His flash in the pan performance effectively saved Peter Carroll. If he would have been the classic Penny, we would have been 5-12.
Well, let's play the more what's more likely game. On all the evidence that we have of Penny, we have 5 really great games and yeah. then 3 quarter seasons of
he mixed in a game or two there where it was kind of like this last season or the last yeah. few games of the season.
Well, I actually went through all the draft picks the other day, and I was surprised to see that Penny had at least registered a carry or two in a lot more games than I had realized.
That's right.
It was a little surprising, and that research we'll unveil that in an upcoming show here, but I just wanted to kind of see John Schneider's success rate overall throughout his tenure, because a lot of people can't, you know, just giving him the what for about drafting poorly and all that. And it's like, well, is that true or is that not true? And it's some interesting results, I think.
Yeah, that is something. Yeah, I think that was something that we had planned for this week until there was movement within the ranks. So yeah, that put John Schneider's evaluation off for at least a week.
That's right. I'm sure he's breathing a huge sigh of relief.
Whew. Yeah, one more week. I'm safe from those guys.
Adam the Rant almost came out with his evaluation of my tenure as the Seahawks GM.
Looking at the 2018 draft, though, Rashad Penny is now number 7 of the running backs in terms of performance. How about that?
Yeah.
Oh, number 6, because one of these guys, Josh Allen, has 2,325 rushing yards. I sorted this by rushing yards, and I just assumed yeah. everybody yeah. above him was actually a running back.
Nah.
Oh, and Lamar, he's top 5. Lamar Jackson is number 2. So actually, Rashad Penny is a top 5 running back from the 2018 class.
Yeah, I guess so. Who's above him?
Well, it goes Nick Chubb, Lamar Jackson, Sony Michel, Saquon Barkley, Josh Allen, then Ronald Jones, and Rashad Penny.
You'd pretty much rather have all those guys, right?
I wouldn't mind having Lamar as my running back.
Well, I don't know that he's going to take the... He might be more frail than Penny.
Gosh, I hope he comes back after the season.
Oh, absolutely, man. I don't root for him to get injured. It's just, you know, his body type and his style of play.
Yeah, well... Now, when we're talking about body type and style of play, I'd rather have the body type of Lamar Jackson than Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I think that would be an important thing. I think I made a joke to you earlier that I think if the Cardinals were smart, what they would do is they go out and sign, like, I don't know, Andy Dalton or somebody like that to play like the first 6-7 weeks and just get him to a 500 mark and then put Kyler in for the second half of the year. And, you know, that because Kyler's never going to be a 17 or a 16 game quarterback, let alone a 17 game quarterback, let alone playoffs. Like, that's never happening.
Yeah. I mean, that would never happen, but I would almost go the other route and give Kyler every other week off and then give him 2 weeks to heal. I think that would help his deal.
I think that would be really tough because then you'd just be flip-flopping between quarterbacks.
Oh, you wouldn't have
the consistency. Rather than like giving a quarterback a stretch. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Jerv comes in and says, I would give Penny a $7 million contract with $1 million guaranteed. So going the million guaranteed route, but going high on the incentives route.
Okay. I'd be fine with that. I mean, anything there where you're not like just on the hook for a big number, considering his injury history, I think is the way to go.
Yeah. The idea of three came to me with the fact that he made just about three this last year. I feel like you, just to keep him on the roster and not disrespect him, you have to give him a little bit of a raise. But yeah, I do. One thing that we didn't really talk about so much with our discussion was the idea of incentives. And yeah, at least if he has a decent enough floor that he wants to remain here. Yeah, I could see that.
It would make sense. That's an option that, again, we didn't talk about and probably should have. It's a smart thought.
The Bard comes in, says, "Hi, fellas. Sorry, I haven't been in touch, but I was struck down with the dreaded COVID. Been in isolation and meant to email, but one of the symptoms was I just can't be arsed, and that stopped me from typing." What's that mean? "But one of the symptoms was I can't be arsed, and that stopped me typing. Well, a strange old season came to an end, and overall, we were just less than bang average. We have to suck on that, but improve next season. So what happens? Pete out, John out, Ross out? Well, if you have my two, Penneth, I think it will be none of the above. I don't think I can do any better than what we already have, but I may be well wrong. We'll see. If I'm not too bothered about no first-round draft pick, as we have no northwards of $50 million, so let's go and spend it before we blow the bloody doors off. Am I right? I'm not sure, but that's my feeling. We have second to seventh-round draft picks at number 10, so it's not a crisis. A new defensive coordinator? Ah, that's another conversation. Go Hawks from the Bard." And this came in before, obviously, we got the news.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope John's on the mend there for sure. But let's see. He touched on the defensive coordinator and the idea that we kind of got the best that we're going to get. Well, yeah, in a lot of ways. I sat and I watched like this playoff and just thinking about some of these teams making offseason changes, right, that had similar records to the Seahawks or maybe worse, or just the teams that had similar records. I mean, would you trade positions with, I don't know, like the Bears or the Eagles or, I mean, geez, just go down the list of all these teams that, finished out of the playoffs or barely made it. And I feel like we could have beat the Niners. I think we could have beat the Cowboys. I think we probably could have a chance to beat the Rams. Now, I haven't watched Tampa and Green Bay yet, but I don't know. Maybe we couldn't beat them. But a lot of these teams, I felt like we had a shot. Like if we could have just made it, just not that far off.
Shoot, the Titans got the number one seed in the AFC. So this did seem to be the most level playing field, I guess, among the playoff teams. But then we even saw that teams like the Eagles and even the Cowboys probably had no business even being in the playoffs. And even on the AFC side, there were teams that just didn't belong. We saw the Patriots get their doors blown off, too. So,
well, yeah, Cowboys are a great example. Would you rather be the Cowboys or us after this season?
I'd rather be us.
Yeah, like not even close. Like McCarthy and an overpaid Dak.
Well, especially if they're talking about getting their coordinators poached, which they're the hot names with Moore and Quinn looking for coaching jobs. So,
yeah. Yeah, big contract for Zeke Elliott that doesn't seem to be paying off.
Oh my gosh. No, not at all. And they couldn't get him. Well, and that was the thing that I guess surprised me the most was just how poor that offensive line of theirs looked in that game.
Yeah. They've been deteriorating for a couple years.
Zeke had no holes to even run through.
Right.
Jason Harden comes in and some more contract talk here, says there is an easy solution for Diggs. Give him a top 10 position contract and load it with incentives that are easy to reach, but still require him to have more than 10 starts to achieve. Free agency should focus on the line, yes, but we really need that Leo guy that Frank Clark was supposed to be and still haven't found in a decade. Disley is good, but Parkinson is ready, and I am excited to see what he can do. So stay, goes, meh. Sign Penny to one of those two-year contracts with the second year voidable, safe for both sides. Love the work you do. Keep us posted. Go Hawks from Jason.
Yeah, go Hawks, Jason.
And what he's saying about the Diggs contract is that you give him the 10 starts because I think it's based on, well, It's based on the number of games that you can be expected to play. Mm. But I don't think he's had that many years where he's not started a full season, really.
No, he's been pretty durable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it seems as if the little flockers are all very much the types of parents that probably parent with the carrot a lot more than the stick is what it seems like here. A lot of incentive-based contract ideas. I mean, maybe they could all come up with an incentive-based contract for us because we're talking about trying to expand the show, make a little more money, get out of the sawmill. Maybe I need an incentive-based contract.
I'll have to think about that.
Yeah.
Smell You Later comes in, and this was on YouTube, says, I was a first episode buyer. Love this show from the jump. Good balance of humor, seriousness, skepticism, credit due where necessary. And I think that was going back to that one-star review that came in.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate that, man, especially being in from the jump. I mean, that was, like Brandon said, this is going to be our 10th year coming up. It's amazing how many people have been with us for that long.
Well, and I'm curious too by the comment if it was just first episode bought in from the first listen. So not necessarily episode one of the show, but
no, just don't take this away from him.
Okay.
Smell You Later has been there forever.
I don't know. We weren't on YouTube to start with. So that's just where the question comes from.
Well, maybe he followed us to YouTube because it was a good time. Maybe he's an early adopter of all our new YouTube success that's coming up.
It could be.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again to all of our members of the flock. GetInTheFlock.com. And we're going to be thanking everybody at the $12 level and above at the end of this episode.
Fantastic.
Let's get on to some Do Better and Better at Life.
All right, man. My Do Better this week is for Malik McDowell. This guy. He had the world wrapped around his pinky.
He came back. He came back.
Had a second chance. After that boneheaded ATV accident.
I don't even know if it might have been third chance.
Might have been third chance, but latches on with the Browns, has a year that, you know, showed that he at least belongs in the league. I mean, it wasn't anything great, but, you know, he played okay. Had a chance to get his life back together, make some bank, all of that. And then over this last weekend, he gets arrested for beating the hell out of a cop. Like, apparently the cop came to some call and he found Malik McDowell sitting on a curb and Malik just charged him and just punched the holy crap out of the cop and then eventually ran off and got tased. Like, what is this guy doing? He had every opportunity to just make a boatload of money, have a great career in the NFL, and he just basically flushed it down the drain. So I'm just disappointed and a little mad about it. I'm still mad about it from after we drafted him. Malik McDowell, do better.
Yeah, one of those cases where I don't know if do better is strong enough, man. That's
I know. I tried to say a very strong do better.
you did emphasize the do better very strongly, but this is a whole nother level.
Speaking of emphasis, I know for sure that he will not be around in the NFL when it comes to the next league. New year.
All right.
Yeah, I'm really proud of myself for working that back in here.
now, everybody, I am curious to know though if am I the only one that had the problem with that?
Probably not.
And now I've made it worse for all of us. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, this is how it is. Now it's league new year. That's how this is from here on out.
Well, my do better this week, I may have to change it to you.
Yeah.
My do better this week is for, there's a lot of over the top outrage going on from this past weekend of football. And I can't tell which is more over the top. You got Bruce Arians, who slapped one of his players in the helmet and bumped into him. And people are calling for Bruce Arians. Oh, gosh, should he even be allowed to keep his job? Because Urban Meyer, you know, he was just even alleged to have kicked his kicker. And here we see Arians on the field slapping his player in the helmet. Look, we all know that Arians is a huge jerk. This is not a shocking revelation to me. But
right.
I've seen worse from celebrations on players of getting slapped in the helmet. And right. So I don't think I can use this as calling for Bruce Arians' job, or, you know, maybe he should be fined. That's fine. But Yeah. I just saw a little bit over the top with, because you hear people talking about, oh, he hit one of his players. And I went and watched the video. And it's like, yeah, he just slapped the dude upside the head. His helmet. He slapped him in the helmet. Like, that's
right.
I think he's okay.
Yeah, I don't know that he should be fine, but it's definitely a 15-yard penalty. I know that.
If he's a quarterback. Then Dak Prescott was joking about how maybe officials deserve to have trash thrown at him, which a lot of media members were crushing him for. But I'm pretty sure it was a room full of media that was laughing at Dak as he was making the comment. So the media in the room were taking it as a joke. So I don't know if we need to be taking his comment seriously after the fact when he was joking in the room. Maybe we need to go after the media members who laughed at him and didn't immediately condemn him for saying these
unprofessional comments
and damaging to officiating. But also, why are we going after Dak? Go after the people in the stands. There's cameras everywhere. You put them up. Let's shame the people who did the crime. Do better.
Yeah, do better, man. Like, yeah, the media needs to understand, and they've had a hard time with this, I don't know, for probably a good 10, 15 years. Context matters. So a joke is a joke. And not only that, but to your point, man, it's not like it was a stand-up comedian up there who told a joke and it just didn't hit. Like, it was over the line, and the audience goes, ooh.
Right.
Like, you hear the groan. It wasn't that. No. They all chuckled right along with it, you accomplices. You cowardice accomplices. Good Lord.
Because, look, we all know that if you're in the stands, you shouldn't throw stuff at players. Well, shoot, one of the Cowboys players almost got hit by a water bottle, and it was a good thing he was looking at the crowd because he was able to put his helmet up and knock it away. I mean, those people, again, we don't need to be going after Dak in this situation. We need to be going after the dudes that were throwing crap onto the field.
No, 100%. The best part is that now Dallas fans can't make fun of Philly fans for throwing stuff at Santa anymore. Like, right. That's
got. Yeah, they were throwing stuff at their own players.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those guys need to do better.
Yeah, lots of do better there.
On to better at life.
All right, man. My better at life this week is for David Blomquist, Hong Kong Hawk, and also Mark Sessler of the Around the NFL podcast. Hong Kong Hawk comes in the Ring of Honor and says, hey, if you hadn't listened to the last episode of Around the NFL podcast, I hope you do. Tune into the last 3 minutes and 20 seconds because you get to hear the admission that they are under the thumb of the NFL, that they have to talk good about the Rams. And I can't remember exactly the context, but eventually
I have it right here. I have it queued up.
Yeah. Play it.
When I'm going to be there. And so I have something now, I'm not rude. You know, I am contractually obligated to say pretty things about the Rams, but I'm not really rooting for either team, but I would like to make it clear
on behalf of the rest of us on the podcast, we are not contractually obligated to say nice things about the Rams.
Right. Wait, what are you talking about?
That's way in your head, Mark.
It's like my kids are Rams fans and I can't even like get it in me to like be particularly like a big fan. I mean, I'm like, I'm happy for them.
You can choose to believe me or them.
So there we go. I think we need to isolate that clip where of him saying, I am contractually obligated to say nice things about the Rams.
Yes, finally, a full-blown admission to the bullshit that is the NFL media when it comes to the Rams and the Rams having to work in L.A. Hong Kong Hawk and Mark Sessler, they make me feel like my tinfoil hat is actually protecting me from all of that crazy nonsense that's out there. Thank you so much for bringing that up. And an honorary do better to Dan Hanzus for like trying to employ a cover-up directly after that. But I'm not going to let that take away from Hong Kong Hawk and Sessler. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yes, I'm sure that when we isolate that clip down, it will not ever be taken out of context at all.
I am contractually obligated to say pretty things about the Rams.
It's perfect. What could go wrong?
Well, my better at life this week is for some of the developers over at Google. We got to see if you because Betty White, she would have turned 100 this week. And unfortunately, she didn't make it. But one of the things that Google did on her birthday, you type in Betty White on Google, you scroll down and it gives you a little thank you for being a friend graphic and a rose there with rose petals falling down the screen. It was a nice touch. And I want to thank Amy for pointing it out and making sure to let me know before the end of the day. I know I pass it along to my mom. I pass it on to you, Adam. And so to the developers at Google for making that happen. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, you did pass that on to me. And you said, be sure to search Betty White in Google and scroll down. I was like, oh, okay. So I did that. I Googled Betty White and I go to scroll down. And it was right as my finger hit like a little icon off to the side that all of that happened. And I was like, oh, I must have tapped something weird or something. That was unusual. Okay. But kind of cool. And so I'm continuing to scroll down thinking that like there's going to be some mention of the podcast and all of our talk about the Golden Girls or something. Like I was like, is there something to do with us? Because apparently it's got to all be about me. And so yeah, I'd scroll down, couldn't figure it out, text you back. I'm like, I'm not seeing it. And then like did it again just to be like, what am I missing? And then it went off again without me touching it. And I was like, oh, it wasn't my mistake. This is what he was talking about. This has nothing to do with us.
It has nothing to do with us. Nothing to do with you. It only had to do with the great Betty White.
That's right. As it should have been. But it was. It was a cool little tribute. And I enjoyed it once I figured out what was going on.
Well, and as a tribute, you know what? As we thank our members of the flock at $12 and above, what do you say we go with our thank you for being a friend version of the music that Floctimus helped put together for this, for what we used on our 300th episode?
Exciting. Bring it back. I'm ready.
Thank you for joining the flock. We talk Seahawks around the clock. Your blood bleeds blue. You're a 12 and a friend of the pod.
Keith Kedover, a.k.a. Floctimus Prime, University of Cybertron, Little Flockers, roll out.
DCH from Sparks, Nevada, the University of Montana Grizzlies.
Eric Trench, rooting for the Seahawks out of Renton, Washington, graduated from Eastern Washington University.
Jameson Holman from Murray, Utah, representing Mississippi State University. Hail State and go Hawks.
Gary Blum from Chappaqua, New York and the University of Pennsylvania, your 2016 Pick'em League champion.
Ron Pepper, UNLV Runnin' Rebels, San Francisco, California.
Hong Kong!
Hawks!
Hong Kong!
Hawks!
Hong Kong!
Hawks!
Ella Esparza, Woodway, Texas, Yale University, and Sam Houston State, eat 'em up, cats.
Lisa in Seattle.
Samuel Gelber, NoHo, California.
David Van Cleve, Camas, Washington, home of the papermakers.
Leo Jesse, Luleå, Sweden, from Luleå Eskimos and Rennes-Cormorant, France.
Paul from San Diego.
Aaron Fisher, a.k.a. Lock It In, Put It In Your Pocket, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Chris Boucher, a.k.a. The Biggest Little Flocker, South Central Louisiana State University. Go Mud Dogs.
Hey, Seahawkers. My name is Garen Taylor. I live in one of the most beautiful places in the world, North Idaho. Hashtag on the rose. Go Hawks.
And continuing down the list of our $12 supporters and above, kick things off with our executive producers, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, and executive producers for this month, Floctimus Prime, Bridget Panovost, and Chad Johnson. And also thanks to Christina in Manassas, Virginia, Craig in Camas, Roe in Federal Way, James in Linwood, Sven in Berlin, Deutschland, Young in Anchorage, Hector in Issaquah, Becca in Manhattan Beach, California, Tim in Austin, Texas, Christian in Oslo, Norway, Jeremiah in the Bronx, Kathy in Eureka, California, Joshua in Seven Oaks, England, Jared in Missoula, Jonathan in Ridgefield, Mitchell in El Dorado Hills, California, Kevin in Onaway, Idaho, Keegan in Colorado Springs, JC in Horsford, England, Jeffrey in Kansas City, Brandon in Huntersville, North Carolina, Kari in Rochester, Brian in Berlin, Connecticut, Connie in Gothenburg, Sweden, Taylor in South Glenelg, Tracy in Kaneohe, Hawaii, James in Beaux Arts, Jake in Seattle, Pepper in Greenville, South Carolina, Ewolf in Seattle, Marvin in Riverdale, Utah, Dean in the Greater Hockdom, Kevin in Surrey, BC, John C. in the Greater Hockdom, John W. in New York, Glenn in Ocoee, Florida, Shoko in New York, Scott in Bakersfield, California, Patrick in Sacramento, California, Bryson in Eltopia, Jay in Monroe, Jeremy in Federal Way, Josh in Cander, New York, Kenneth in Hutto, Texas, Ivy in Renton, Flopster in Clovis, California, Mario in Seattle, Cora in Ditters, Deutschland, Anders in Vila, Denmark, Warren in Dundee, Oregon, Rafe in Beaverton, Oregon, Chris in Austin, Texas, Amy in Squim, Preston in Phoenix, Arizona, Marcus in Potts Point, Australia, Richard in Killeen, Texas, Joshua in Vancouver, Marlin in the Greater Hockdom, Taylor in Spokane, Kyle in the Greater Hockdom, Ryan in Salt Lake City, Dan in the Greater Hockdom, Kevin in Great Glen, England, Chris in Billings, Montana, DJ in Menifee, California, Jamie in Oswestry, England, Jalen in Minneapolis, Kansas, Terrence in Seattle, Norma in the Greater Hockdom, Eugene in Henderson, Nevada, Daniel in Post Falls, Idaho, Jerv in Bristow, Virginia, Joshua in the Greater Hockdom, Jason in Portland, Ian in Seattle, Kayla in Vancouver, Tanner in Kalispell, Montana, Jason in Panama City, Florida, Joanna in Chesterfield, Virginia, Brian in OMAC, Jeff in Gilbert, Arizona, Gordon in Whitefish, Montana, Dr. G in League City, Texas, Ryan D in Crestview, Florida, Ryan P in Fairbanks, Alaska, Nate in Solna, Sweden, Devante in Boise, Idaho, Sean in Cascade, Iowa, via Kalispell, Montana, Leland Hawks in South Jordan, Utah, Johnny D in Silverton, Oregon, Julio in Mililani, Hawaii, Juice in David City, Nebraska, and B Walls 22 in New York.
And when we host the Lombardi, you'll be celebrating with the crew. Well, you will see the biggest Facebook gift party, and you'll smile real big and say, I'm glad I joined the flock. Thank you for joining the flock.
So yes, thank you all for coming in at 12 and above. Thank you for being a friend of the show, and thank you for being a part of this offseason.
Yeah, thanks for all of that, guys. You guys are amazing. And really, I mean, you guys are going to be life-changing for us, I think, over the next couple years here. So appreciate you guys more than you know.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.